Hello, this is Wendy Bauer, returning with the Decatur Herald and Review for June 20th, 2016. We continue now with the death notices, beginning with the funerals scheduled for today, Monday, June 20th, 2016. Patricia Ann Patty Allen, 76, of Peoria, formerly of Decatur, at 11 a.m. in North Fork Cemetery. Wanda A. Hall, 86, of Decatur, at 10 a.m. in First Baptist Church. Betty Sue Jester, 86, of Decatur, at 11 a.m. at Moran and Goebel Funeral Home. Vicki J. Langley, 63, of Decatur, at 2 p.m. in Macon County Memorial Park, Harristown. Catherine N. Martin, 84, of Parrish, Florida, formerly of Decatur, at 11 a.m. at St. Mary's Episcopal Church, Palmetto, Florida. Jacqueline Jackie Mayberry, 86, of Decatur, at 10 a.m. in Graceland Cemetery. David Eugene Smith, 73, of Oriana, 10:30 a.m. at McMullen Young Funeral Home in Bethany. And the list of funerals pending for Monday, June 20th, include Connie Blickenstaff, 81, of Cerro Gordo, who died Saturday, June 18th, 2016. Arrangements are being handled by Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Homes in Cerro Gordo. Clara Gist, 83, of Decatur, died Saturday, June 18th, 2016. Arrangements by Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Lavetta Johnson, 49, of Decatur, died Saturday, June 18, 2016. Arrangements by Walker Funeral Service and Chapel. James Allen Smith, 74, of Shelbyville, died Saturday, June 18, 2016. Arrangements by Howe and Yaki Funeral Home in Shelbyville. John H. Snell, 75, of Decatur, died Saturday, June 18, 2016. Arrangements by Dawson and Wyckoff, West Wood Street Funeral Home. Donald W. Taylor, 55, of Decatur, died Saturday, June 18, 2016. Walker Funeral Service and Chapel will handle the arrangements. And the obituaries include Wayne A. Cox of Decatur. Wayne A. Cox, 82, of Decatur, Illinois, passed away Saturday, June 18, 2016. Funeral services will be held at 1 o'clock p.m. Wednesday, June 22nd at Prairie Avenue Christian Church. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Tuesday, June 21st at Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Home in Decatur. Burial will be in North Fork Cemetery, Decatur. Memorials may be given to Scoville Oriental Garden. Checks may be made payable to the Decatur Park Foundation. Walter Dink Fox of Decatur. Walter Dink Fox, 82, of Decatur, died Wednesday, June 15, 2016, at St. Mary's Hospital. Services celebrating his life will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, June 24, 2016, at St. Peter's AME Church, with visitation 1 hour before the service. Burial will be in Greenwood Cemetery. James A. Lane. James A. Lane, 89, of Sullivan, passed away at 6 a.m. Sunday, June 19th, at Mason Point, Sullivan. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, June 22nd, 2016, at the First Christian Church, Sullivan. Visitation will be held 1 hour before the services at the First Christian Church in Sullivan. Burial will be in Green Hill Cemetery, Sullivan, with military rites by the Sullivan American Legion Post number 68. Beulah M. Reich, Decatur. Beulah Babe M. Reich 103, of Decatur, passed away June 17, 2016, in Lincolnshire Place. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Wednesday, June 22nd, at Pilgrim Lutheran Church. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to service time at the church. Burial will be in St. John's Lutheran Cemetery. Memorials may be given to Pilgrim Lutheran Church. Leroy Davis, of Decatur. Leroy Davis, 70, of Decatur, passed away on June 14, 2016, in Decatur Memorial Hospital. Homegoing services to celebrate Leroy's life will be at 11 a.m. Wednesday, June 22, 2016, in Moran and Goble Funeral Home. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. Wednesday in the funeral home. Burial will be in Greenwood Cemetery. William Lee Kirchover, Mount Zion. William Lee Kirchover, 77, Mount Zion, Illinois, passed away on Thursday, June 16, 2016, at Heartland Healthcare Center in Decatur. A service to celebrate and honor Bill's life will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Tuesday, June 21, 2016, at the Mount Zion Presbyterian Church. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Monday, June 20, 2016, at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Mount Zion. He will be laid to rest at Point Pleasant Cemetery. Memorials can be made to Mount Zion Presbyterian Church or to the Parkinson's Research Foundation. Lillian Louise Landon, of Decatur. Lillian Louise Landon, 82, of Decatur, passed away on Saturday, June 4, 2016, at Riverside Hospital in Newport News, Virginia. The family will host a memorial service celebrating her life, officiated jointly by Reverend Dr. John Kay and Reverend Dr. Miley Palmer. It will be held at 11 a.m., Saturday, July 2, 2016, in First Presbyterian Church, Decatur. Visitation with family will be 1 hour preceding the service. In lieu of flowers, memorial gifts may be given to the First Presbyterian Church or to donors' choice. Vicki J. Langley, Decatur. Vicki J. Langley, 62, of Decatur, Illinois, passed away on Saturday, June 18, 2016, at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Graveside services will be held at 2 o'clock p.m. Monday, June 20th at Macon County Memorial Park, Harristown, Illinois. Catherine N. Martin. Catherine N. Martin, 84, of Parrish, Florida, passed away at Manatee Memorial Hospital, June 15th, 2016. Catherine relocated to Parrish, Florida in 1994. A memorial service will be held on Monday, June 20th at St. Mary's Episcopal Church in Palmetto, Florida at 11 o'clock with visitation 30 minutes prior to the service. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to St. Mary's Episcopal Church. Don Eric Olson, Decatur. Don Eric Olson, 85, of Decatur, Illinois, passed away on Friday, May 27, 2016, at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Memorial services will be held on Thursday, June 23, 2016, at 10 o'clock a.m. at St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Decatur, with visitation 1 hour prior to the services. Burial will follow at Camp Butler National Cemetery, Riverton, Illinois, with military rites conducted by the Macon County Honor Guard. Memorials may be made to the Cross Fund at St. Paul's Lutheran Church or donor's choice. Carolyn Ruth Pilkington. Carolyn Ruth Lehman Pilkington, 73, died December 3, 2014 in Kingman, Arizona. She was born in Decatur, Illinois. A memorial service and interment will be held at Elmwood Cemetery in Rantoul on June 25th, 2016, at 10 o'clock a.m. Robert Radcliffe of Pena. Robert Bob Radcliffe, 90, of Pena, a Marine Corps veteran, died Friday, June 17, 2016. Services will be held at noon on Wednesday at McCracken Dean Funeral Home in Pena. Visitation will be from 10:30 a.m. until the services. Burial will be in Mound Cemetery, Pena, with military rites. Memorials may be made to Pena Community Hospital for hospice or First Baptist Church of Pena. Juanita M. Rutherford, Decatur. Juanita M. Rutherford, 89, of Decatur, Illinois, formerly of rural Dalton City, Illinois, passed away at 3:04 a.m. Friday, June 17, 2016, in Decatur Memorial Hospital. Graveside services for her immediate family members will be at 9:30 a.m. Wednesday, June 22, 2016, at the Mount Zion Township Cemetery in Mount Zion, Illinois. A public memorial service to celebrate Juanita's life will be held at 11 a.m. Wednesday, June 22, 2016, in Antioch Christian Church, Long Creek. Memorials may be made to the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation or Antioch Christian Church. Patricia Ann Patty Allen. Patricia Ann Patty Allen, 76, of Peoria, formerly of Decatur, passed away Wednesday, June 15, 2016, at OSF Richard L. Owens Hospice Home in Peoria. Graveside services will be Monday, June 20th, 2016, at 11 o'clock a.m. at North Fork Cemetery in Decatur. A celebration of Patty's life will be held at the Last Hurrah in Peoria on Friday, July 8th, 2016, at 4 o'clock p.m. Wayne E. Boggs, Mount Zion. Wayne E. Boggs, 85, of Glen Flora, died on Wednesday, June 15, 2016, at Dallas Care and Rehab in Dallas, Wisconsin. Funeral services will be held at 12 noon on Tuesday, June 21st, at Nash Jack and Funeral Home in Ladysmith. A graveside memorial service will be held at 1 o'clock p.m. on Friday, June 24th, at the Northern Wisconsin Veterans Memorial Cemetery in Spooner. Jack Dolan, Jr. Jack Dolan, Jr., 91, of Springfield, formerly of Decatur, passed away June 16th, 2016, at Memorial Medical Center. A visitation will be held at his final and beloved residence, the Illinois Presbyterian Home, 2005 West Lawrence, at 2:30 p.m. on Sunday, June 19th. Memorial contributions can be made to Illinois Presbyterian Home. And we will now continue with an article from the opinion page, an editorial selected, Reestablish Federal Ban on Assault Weapons. The tragedy in Orlando was enabled by social ills afflicting most Western democracy. Homophobia remains obstinate even with advances in marriage equality. Self-radicalized extremists are encouraged by the swamps of the internet here, in Europe, in Canada, and elsewhere. These viruses we know and are fighting. But no other Western nation tolerates such consistent outbreaks of mass shootings. The public health epidemic of mass shootings is a scourge particular to the United States, home to nearly one-third of the world's mass shootings. Our rate of gun homicides is more than five times the rate of Canada. Gun homicides in England are as common as deaths from agricultural farm equipment are in the United States. So what do we do about them as a nation? Nothing, which President Obama said this week was a conscious decision. There are no easy decisions, but there are logical conclusions. Omar Mateen legally bought a semi-automatic Sig Sauer rifle and 30-round magazines just days before the tragedy. Despite the fact that he'd been investigated by the FBI as a suspected terrorist. That investigation ended in 2014, and Mateen wasn't put on a terrorist no-fly watch list. But even if he had been, he still could have bought the rifle because Congress is committed to doing nothing. A logical step to address mass shootings is to renew the assault weapons ban that expired in 2004 under President George W. Bush's watch. It was so full of loopholes and exemptions, it did not reduce overall gun violence. But the number of mass shootings plunged when it was in effect, and more than doubled when it expired. A lead researcher on the federally funded study of the ban has said it would likely have become increasingly effective had it remained in place longer than 10 years because so many existing weapons and high-capacity magazines were grandfathered in. Restrictions must be enacted with the Second Amendment in mind. But the constitutional balance today is askew, tilting wildly away from public safety and common sense. The common denominator among the grisly roll call of mass shootings, San Bernardino, California, Roseburg, Oregon, Newtown, Connecticut, Aurora, Colorado, and now Orlando, is a light, accurate, rapid-firing weapon designed to kill humans. There is also no reason that high-capacity magazines should be readily sold. Listen to the videos shot out inside the Pulse nightclub, pop, 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 in astonishingly rapid, deadly succession. Mateen sprayed the room without pausing to reload. In contrast, watch the video from the Seattle Pacific University shooting in 2014. When the perpetrator had to pause to reload his shotgun, a heroic student, John Mice, tackled and disarmed him. High-capacity magazines act like a deadly accelerant on a fire, boosting the body counts. Both these restrictions are supported by a majority of Americans, according to a poll last year. We also know that Congress is captured by the extreme obstructionist rhetoric of the National Rifle Association and is no more likely to pass new restrictions after the killings of 49 adults in Orlando than it was after the massacre of 20 first graders in Newtown. But voters must not stand mute as once again Congress ignores the virus of mass shootings in favor of little more than a moment of silence and empty words. And from the entertainment page, science writer Roach explains curious curiosity. When most people consider the hardships of war, they focus on the fear and the fighting, the noble cause and the selfless sacrifice. When best-selling science writer Mary Roach tackled the topic, she focused on maggots, stink bombs, and diarrhea. But that's to be expected from Roach, the author known for her funny, unflinching books about the nitty-gritty research behind subjects as diverse as death, sex, and space travel. I'm a little bit of a loose cannon, admitted Roach, 57, about her sixth book, Grunt, The Curious Science of Humans at War. Roach said she came up with the idea for the new book while on assignment in India, researching a story about the world's hottest chili pepper. She learned that the Indian Defense Ministry had actually manufactured a non-lethal weapon from the pepper, so she headed to the lab to check it out. Not only was there that, explained Roach, they were working on a leech repellent, and that was right up my alley. It planted in my head this idea that military science is a whole hidden world related to the day-to-day hardships of being a warrior. The book, published by W.W. Norton & Company, takes a close look at how scientists are working to help soldiers cope with the other enemies in a war zone, including sweltering heat, cacophonous noise, and what Roach describes as ill-timed gastrointestinal urgency. As in her other books, Roach goes straight to the sources, whether it's DeCamp Lemonnier in Djibouti, East Africa, or under the sea in the nuclear submarine USS Tennessee. Seeing the places in person is vital, she said. Otherwise, I don't have a narrative, she said. You can have quotes from talking heads on the phone, but the reader isn't led into details with conversations and character. Access is everything, explained Roach. For this book, she wanted to cover an Army medevac operation, but couldn't get approval. Instead, she covers the training in a chapter on realistic military simulations. It has everything to do with whether I can go somewhere and observe something that will be fresh and surprising, Roach said. Roach approaches her subjects as an outsider, someone with no formal scientific training. She actually has a bachelor's degree in psychology. She simply asks the sometimes gross questions everybody wonders about. Hence, a chapter in Grunt on work to perfect penis transplants for soldiers whose genitals are mutilated in battle, and yes, a chapter on why diarrhea can be a threat to national security. Roach takes 2 to 3 years to research and write a book and said she's divided about which part of the process is most enjoyable. The reporting is amazing, she said. If it isn't fun, I don't include it. I'm a very self-indulgent writer. Fans may think the author of Stiff, The Curious Lives of Human Cadavers, Bonk, The Curious Coupling of Science and Sex, and Gulp, Adventures of the Alimentary Canal, would have a long list of one-word subjects just waiting to be explored. But Roach said she often finishes one book without knowing what the next will be. In a recent interview with Fresh Air host Terry Gross on National Public Radio, Roach mused that she might someday tackle the science of aging. Jokingly, she suggested her next title, Geezer. And 3 books are recommended in the New at the Library column. Fiction, Catherine of Aragon, The True Queen, a novel by Alison Weir. A princess of Spain, Catalina is only 16 when she sets foot on the shores of England. The youngest daughter of the powerful monarchs Ferdinand and Isabella, Catalina is a coveted prize for a royal marriage. Arthur, Prince of Wales and heir to the English throne, has won her hand. But tragedy strikes, and Catalina, now Princess Catherine, is betrothed to the future Henry VIII. She must wait for his coming of age, an ordeal that tests her resolve, casts doubt on her trusted confidants, and turns her into a virtual prisoner. Catherine's patience is rewarded when she becomes Queen of England. The affection between Catherine and Henry is genuine, but forces beyond her control threaten to rend her marriage, and indeed the nation, apart. Henry has fallen under the spell of Catherine's maid of honor, Anne Boleyn. Now Catherine must be prepared to fight to the end, if God wills it, for her faith, her legitimacy, and her heart. As always, Weir demonstrates a keen eye for crafting dramatic scenes of beautiful, accurate detail, instilling in the reader's mind's eye a definite you-are-there sense. If this greatly impressive inaugural installment is any indication, Tudor lovers have much to look forward to. And in nonfiction, The Last Stop, Vanishing Rest Stops of the American Roadside by Ryan Ford. While driving in 2007 on a solo road trip from California to Central Texas, photographer Ryan Ford was struck by a recurring sight, humble, solitary rest stops. A nondescript blur outside the car window to most, the quirky rest stops on Ford's journey seized her attention. Mock adobe dwellings in New Mexico, Depression-era stone houses in Arizona, faux oil rigs in Texas. After doing some research, Ford was alarmed to learn that these rest areas were currently being closed and demolished all over the country. With countless commercial options at nearly every highway exit, many felt that these old rest stops were no longer necessary. Upon learning the news, she immediately felt an urgency to capture as many as she could before they were gone forever. The last stop does far more than capture the remarkable, effective design of our nation's road stops. It preserves a moment in time that is quickly fading, a unique period in the American travel experience when the journey was just as important as the destination. It's clear these modest structures did far more than provide picnic tables. They shaped our collective experience of golden age car travel across the vast United States. And for children, Ragweed's Farm Dog Handbook, Learn from the Best, by Ann Vitor Kennedy. Eager to mentor future farm dogs, Ragweed offers a how-to essentially built around one rule: don't do anything that's not your job. The rooster wakes the farmer early in the morning. That's his job. That's not your job. But if you do break the prime directive, say by rolling in the mud like a pig or sitting in the chicken's nests, don't worry. There's usually a biscuit or three in it for you, especially if you can persuade the farmer you are just keeping the chickens safe from a fox. And finally, the page A3 local briefs, Shelbyville drowning accident. A 20-year-old PENA man was airlifted to St. John's Medical Center in Springfield Saturday afternoon after a near drowning on the Kaskaskia River south of Lake Shelbyville. Witnesses said the man became entangled in debris and was pulled underwater while tubing the popular stretch of river below the Lake Shelbyville Dam. Boaters on the river were unable to rescue him and called the Shelby County Dive Team, who performed CPR. A week ago, a 21-year-old Decatur man died while swimming in the 9th Street Beach on Lake Shelbyville. Next, from Decatur, cell ID theft. Police say a Decatur man had a cell phone bill of $2,800 run up in his name after a criminal stole his identity. The 41-year-old victim said he found out about the Sprint charges when he did a credit check. Records show his identity was stolen sometime between May 31st and June 25th in 2015. In Forsyth, injuries in crash. Police say an intoxicated woman driving on a revoked license for a previous DUI plowed her vehicle into the back of a stopped traffic at Forsyth intersection. This happened Saturday afternoon, sparking a chain reaction crash that caused injuries. The 64-year-old woman was among the injured and taken to Decatur Memorial Hospital for treatment of non-life-threatening injuries, according to Lieutenant Jamie Belcher with the Macon County Sheriff's Office. Police say her vehicle had hit another car, which then hit the car in front of it, and a passenger from that vehicle was also treated at hospital for injuries police say are not serious. Belcher says northbound traffic was stopped for a red light on US 51 at Barnett Avenue when the accident happened at 3:15 p.m. The woman was later booked on charges of DUI, driving on a revoked license, and failure to reduce speed to avoid an accident. And finally, in Decatur, arson attempt. Police and firefighters are investigating after an attempt was made to burn down a vacant Decatur house Saturday night. Remnants of a fire deliberately set were found in the house at 1471 East Olive Street after the alarm was raised at 8:50 p.m. The flames did not take hold and the fire did minimal damage. This has been Wendy Bauer with the Decatur Herald and Review, June 20th, 2016. I look forward to reading with you again soon. Thank you.